ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
So today we're reading from the beautiful the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 9, entitled The Appearance of Demon Vritasura. We'll be doing verse 1, but first we will read the introduction. As described in this chapter, Indra, the king of heaven, killed Vishwarupa. Killed Vishwarupa, and therefore Vishwarupa's father performed a yagna to kill Indra. When Vritasura appeared from that yagna, the demigods in fear sought shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and glorified him. Because of affection for the demons, Vishwarupa secretly supplied them with the remnants of yagna. When Indra learned about this, he beheaded Vishwarupa. But he later regretted killing Vishwarupa because Vishwarupa was a Brahmana. Although competent to neutralize the sinful reactions for killing a Brahmana, Indra did not do so. Instead, he accepted the reactions. Later, he distributed these reactions among the land, water, trees, and women in general. Since the land accepted one-fourth of the sinful reactions, a portion of the land turned into desert. The trees were also given one-fourth of the sinful reactions, and therefore they drip sap, which is prohibited for drinking. Because women accepted one-fourth of sinful reactions, they are untouchable during their menstrual period. Since water was also infested with sinful reactions, when bubbles appear in water, it cannot be used for any purpose. Although Vishwarupa was killed, his father, Tvashta, performed a sacrifice to kill Indra. Unfortunately, if mantras are chanted irregularly, they yield an opposite result. This happened when Tvashta performed this yagna. While performing the yagna to kill Indra, Tvashta chanted a mantra to increase Indra's enemies. But because he chanted the mantra wrong, the sacrifice produced an asura named Vritasura, of whom Indra was the enemy. When Vritasura was generated from the sacrifice, his fierce features made the whole world afraid. And his personal effulgence diminished even the power of the demigods. Finding no other means of protection, the demigods began to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the enjoyer of all the results of sacrifice, who is supreme throughout the entire universe. The demigods all worshipped him because ultimately no one but him can protect a living entity from fear and danger. Seeking shelter of a demigod instead of worshipping the Supreme Personality of God is compared to trying to cross the ocean by grasping the tail of a dog. A dog can swim, but that does not mean that one can cross the ocean by grasping a dog's tail. Being pleased with the demigod, the Supreme Personality of Godhead advised them to approach Dadichi to beg him for the bones of his own body. Dadichi would comply with the request of the demigods, and with the help of these bones, Vritasura would be killed. Text one. Please repeat after me. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Tasyasan Vishwarupasya. Tasyasan Vishwarupasya. Shiramshi Trini Bharata Shiramshi Trini Bharata Soma Pitam Sura Pitam Soma Pitam Sura Pitam Anadam Iti Shushruma Anadam Iti Shushruma Shri Sutra Uvacha Dasya San Vishwarupasya Shiram Shitrini Bharata Soma Pitam Sura Pitam Anadam Iti Shushruma Shri Shuka Uvacha Tasya San Vishwarupasya Shiram Shri Trini Bharata Soma Pitam Sura Pitam Anadam Iti Shushruma Others? Shri Sukadev Goswami said, Tasya of him, Asan, there were, Vishwarupasya, of Vishwarupa, the priest of the demigods, Shri Ramshi, heads, Trini, three, Bharata, O Maharaj Parikshit, Soma Pitam, used for drinking the Soma beverage, Sura Pitam, used for drinking wine, Ana Adam, used for eating, Iti, thus, Shushruma, I have heard by the Parampara system. Transition by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Vishwarupa, who was engaged as the priest of the demigods, had three heads. He used one to drink the beverage Somaras, another to drink wine, and the third to eat food. O King Parikshit, thus I have heard from authorities. Please repeat after me. Sri Shukadev Goswami continued. Vishwarupa, who was engaged as the priest of the demigods, had three heads. He used one to drink the beverage Soma Rasa, another to drink wine, and the third to eat food. O King Parikshit, thus I have heard from authorities. Report by Srila Prabhupada. One cannot directly perceive the kingdom of heaven, its king and other inhabitants, or how they perform their various engagements. For no one can go to the heavenly planets. Although modern scientists have invented many powerful space vehicles, they cannot even go to the moon, not to speak of other planets. By direct experience, one cannot learn anything beyond the range of human perception. One must hear from authorities. Therefore, Shukadev Goswami, a great personality, says, "What I am describing to you, O King, is what I have heard from authoritative sources." End quote. This is the Vedic system. The Vedic knowledge is called Shruti because it must be received by being heard from authorities. It is beyond the realm of our false experimental knowledge. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshuram Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born to the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with prochetic knowledge. I offer my shakti. In 1920, at the second international conference of mathematics, a very famous mathematician, scholar of pure mathematics, David Hilbert, he proposed 23 essential problems in the mathematical community that had to be solved. He was concerned that he was very much into formalism and proving that mathematics was a consistent system. Now, to us, when we think of mathematics, we think it's a mathematical proof, it's irrefutable logic. But actually, in the world of mathematics, there was problems. And one of his proofs, one of the problems he wanted to have solved was that mathematics was consistent. There was no inconsistencies in mathematics. If there's an inconsistency in anybody's argument, if you go before the judge and there's an inconsistency in your argument, then you're considered wrong. Huh? You're lying, or there's something is wrong in your argumentation. Similarly, the mathematicians were concerned that mathematics should also be consistent. There should not be contradictions. If mathematics is contradictory, then, such an important science, the queen of all sciences, all of science is based upon mathematics. Physics, chemistry, biology, is all based upon mathematics. And if it's inconsistent, then the whole thing falls apart. So he wanted that this should be proved that mathematics was consistent. Unfortunately, in 1931, 11 years later, another mathematician, Kurt Gödel, a personal friend of Einstein, he proved in his incompleteness theorem that any axiomatic system of sufficient complexity, even something as simple as arithmetic. Everybody knows arithmetic? Addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. Something as simple as arithmetic, it was inconclusive, it was undecidable. You could not decide if it was consistent or not. So what he ultimately proved, that no axiomatic system can understand itself. That it has to be
You're going to break my teeth. By hitting me in the head, so I know.
Have you finished? Actually, I can't see anything now.
That no axiomatic system of sufficient complexity could understand itself. It had to be explained by a higher system. Now, I think we're familiar with this, that inductive logic, inductive reasoning cannot explain anything. It has to come from a higher system. So if something as simple as arithmetic is, you know, cannot be decided if it's consistent or not, if it's contradictory or not, what to speak of something so much more complicated than our body, or the world around us, the universe in which we live in, the reality which we see. It's a significantly more complicated system than arithmetic. So if arithmetic can't be explained, cannot explain itself, therefore what we see around us cannot be explained by our blunt senses or logic and reasoning. In Shastra, in investigation, Mimamsa, in the Vedanta, there is various pramanas which are used. The main pramanas are patyaksha, the blunt material senses observing things; anumana, logic and reason. We infer from what we see, then we extrapolate on that. And then shabda, we hear from authority. Of course, there's different authority. If anybody goes to school, they're going to hear shabda. They're going to hear what the teacher has to tell them. They accept that as knowledge. But teachers are fallible persons. In the material world, and Krishna explains in the 15th chapter of the Gita, that there are, that in the material world, that there's two types of individuals, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, everybody is fallible. In the spiritual world, everybody is infallible. And above all of them, there was Krishna, who was the Purushottama. So these mundane teachers, you go to school, they're going to be giving infallible knowledge. They will make mistakes. So what kind of shabda should we be hearing from? We should be hearing shabda brahman. That shabda coming directly from Krishna. That is perfect. Because Krishna, he created this world. He created us. He created everything, the whole universe, the whole cosmic manifestation is made from Krishna's energy, our very bodies. This world, the floor, the temple, everything is Krishna's energy. We ourselves are Krishna's energy. But it is not directly Krishna. It is his energy. But he can manifest himself in any bit, in any part of the universe, he can manifest from that. The proof was when the Sringadeva appeared from inside a column. Because Krishna is everywhere. What do we sing every morning? The Sringadeva, he is everywhere. He's inside, he's outside. I hear Nisringho, he is inside your own heart, and he is all pervasive. And he can manifest at any moment in time, from any place. So Krishna, he has created this whole universe. So if we want to understand what the universe is about, what life is about, what we were about, what everything is about, we have to get this knowledge from Krishna. Because he created the system. It's not by our tiny little brain that we are going to understand the system. If even the axiomatic system of arithmetic, such as some people think, can't explain itself, you know, there may be inconsistencies. They don't even know if there's consistencies or not. It's, you know, it's incomplete. It's incomplete in the spirit. What to speak of this cosmic manifestation? So this is why we have to accept this shabda brahma. That's the only way. The only way. Krishna reveals himself through this shabda brahma. It's coming directly from Krishna. If we want to understand, if we want to go beyond the levels of animals, you know, the problems of life of the animals, the struggle of existence is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. If we want to stay in that level, we will not make any inquiry. But the first sign that you are a human being, beyond being a dvipada pashu, a two-legged animal, is that we make an inquiry. What is the meaning of life? Why are we suffering? Why am I here? Why am I struggling so much? How to get out of this miserable place? We realize this, the understanding that this is a miserable place, it's a sign of knowledge. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verse 8 to 13. one of the symptoms of the person has knowledge is what?
Janma mrityu saravyadi jaravyadi dosha dukkana dasha.
He understands the intrinsic evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. If you understand that this is an evil thing, then you will try to make a solution. But if you just think, oh, this is part of life, you know, we have to accept the good with the bad, that death is part of life. No, it's not part of life. It's forced upon us. Because we can't think of a solution, we accept it. But the natural feeling of the soul is to be immortal, that we are immortal. That's why we struggle against death. That's why we struggle against all these problems. Because it's not our natural position. So if we want to get out of this system, if we want to understand why we're here, what the universe is for, we have to approach authorities.
As Prabhupada said, authorities.
Who are the authorities? Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. Out of all of them, Shastra is the most important. Because a guru is only a guru if he's following Shastra, if he's teaching Shastra. A sadhu is only a sadhu if he is propagating Shastra. An acharya is only an acharya if he is following Shastra, if he's living Shastra. Therefore, Shastra is most important. In Vedanta Sutra, it says, Atato Brahma Jignyasa. In the human form of life, now is the time to inquire into the Absolute. And what is that Absolute? Janmade Yasataha. That the Absolute is the source of everything. Everything is coming from this Absolute Brahma. And how to find out? Shastra Yonimva. That all only knowledge of Brahma, which is beyond our senses, can only be known through Shastra Vidhi. That's the only way. The first process of bhakti, the first step in bhakti is Shraddha. So we have to have faith in this Shastra Vidhi. It is our only instrument, it's the only way that we can understand ourselves, who is Krishna, what is the world. That's the only way we can understand anything which is beyond our senses, beyond our intellectual capacity. There's so many things which are beyond that. Because our senses are imperfect. We can make a mistake. We may try to make, you know, some telescope or microscope to enhance our senses, but ultimately we have to put our eye to it. So they're imperfect. And then when we our own power of inference, our logic and reason, that's also imperfect. I see smoke on the hill. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Therefore, that must be fire. But it might not be fire. It could be dust rising. Some horses are going, and they're raising dust. And it looks like smoke. Most likely it is smoke, but it might not be. It could be dust of some sort that's coming up. So we make mistakes. So we have to depend completely on Shastra for those things which are beyond the purview of our senses. Because, Shastras are our eyes. Shastra Chakshu. Chanakya Panel explains that a Brahmana, he sees through the Shastra. How does it, and he said, a Kshatriya sees through. What does a Kshatriya see through? How does a Kshatriya see?
Strength. Power.
No, through his spies. He sees through spies. In the fourth canto, Pitu Maharaj explained in Pitu Maharaj's kingdom that he suppressed all sinful activities. Why? He had a very complicated, detailed spy system in place. No one could perform any sins, even secretly, because he had a complete espionage network going through his whole country. Spying is good. When the king is in charge, and somebody like Pitu Maharaj, he suppressed all sinfulness because he had spies. So a king sees through his spies. And a cow, how does a cow see? Through his nose. A cow is able to detect something good to eat by smelling it. And an ordinary man sees through his eyes. So if we want to see reality, we do not see through our eyes. We have to see through the Shastra. Shastra chakshus. It's like where we have to have complete faith in the Shastra. It's like a pilot. When a pilot is flying an airplane, specifically at night, a
pilot has to fly, not by what he sees. He can't see because it's totally disorienting. You can't tell if you're up or if you're down, if you're a little bit tilted down, you won't even know, and you'll crash into the ground. Because you don't notice that you're not exactly horizontal. Because you can't orient yourself properly in the sky. So how do they fly? They fly totally according to instruments, the instrument panel. They have to have complete faith that those instruments are telling them the truth. And that's how they fly that plane. And that's how when I get on the plane this afternoon at 4 o'clock, I'm going to be having faith. I'm going to be arriving at Bangalore at 6:10. Because he's going to be flying by instruments. The same way our instrument, this is our instrument, Srimad Bhagavatam. It allows us to see reality. And just like that pilot, and everybody in the airplane has to have complete faith in those instruments, we have to put our complete faith in Shastra. And the Guru and the Acharyas and the Sadhus who are following Shastra. That will be our guide. And in that way we will know what is real and what is unreal. Now, our faith is not blind faith. It's not blind, it's a science. Not blind faith. Sometimes devotees are accused, oh, you're just blind followers, you're blind faith. No, it is a science. Prabhupada always emphasized that Krishna's consciousness is the science of God. So how is it a science? Because there, in the science, like for example in chemistry, I was a student of chemistry. So in the lecture, the professor, he gives some chemical equation, he gives some theory, but then you go to the laboratory and you perform the experiment. Right? He says, if you combine these two gases, you combine some hydrogen, you combine some oxygen, and you get a liquid, water. Now, you might say, well, this doesn't sound logical. How about you combining two gases? You should get out of gas. But instead, you get a liquid. Now, again, I have no faith. I don't believe this. But you go to the laboratory, and you mix them together, and sure enough, you get water. H2O. So similarly, in order to, we have also a laboratory, the laboratory of our heart. We perform the experiments, the protocols of bhakti yoga, we perform the sadhana, and you get a result. As Krishna explains in the third chapter of the Gita, this process has been followed for eons, and millions of people have achieved perfection in this. It is a tried and true method. It works if you do it correctly. So you may, just like in any, even in a chemical experiment or any laboratory experiment, if you don't do it properly, you're not going to get the result. Like if you go to make an experiment and you use a spatula and you dip it into some chemical and then you put it into your beaker, you forget to clean that spatula. It's now contaminated with some other chemical. And later you do some other experiment and you dip that contaminated spatula into a different chemical and you try to do the experiment, you'll get a different result because you won't get the proper result because it was contaminated. There was some residue on that spoon. So if you don't get the same result as your classmates, that's because you made a mistake. Everybody else got the proper result. You didn't because you used contaminated material. So if we don't get the same result that others who are striving, who are doing the same experiment means, we are making a mistake. And there's so many causes for error, so many offenses. Ten offenses against the holy name, various things that you can do wrong. That's why there's a whole system of protocols that we should perform, that we have to do, in order to get the desired result, which is mentioned in the chapter. It is a science. If you do it properly, you will get the result that everybody else got. If you're not getting the result, it means you made a mistake. And specifically the idea is contamination. We're contaminated. We're introducing some contaminated ideas. We're not following properly. And that's why we don't get the result. The difference between they are the ones who are blindly following, not us. Because everybody can do the experiments in their heart. But not everybody can do the scientific experiments. You can't. How many of you can build a superconducting super collider which cost $100 billion, and then do those experiments and find out if they're correct or not. Even very simple physics experiments require, you know, very expensive laboratory equipment. We can't do that. We have to simply accept what they say, what the high priests of science tell us. We have to accept it blindly, because we can't reproduce any of those experiments. In fact, there was recently a scandal that was in one article which indicated a scandal in the medical industry, that nobody is interested in reproducing other people's scientific experiments because there's no fame in it, there's no money in it. So many pharmaceutical companies, they lose a lot of money because they have to actually go and reproduce the results of scientific experiments, because many of these scientists are cheating. Just for getting name and fame and some adulation, they will fudge the results, and then the pharmaceutical companies accept it blindly and find that they're wrong. And then somebody dies in the experiment. You know, their medicines don't actually work. So they have to go, they have to spend millions of dollars to check to see that these scientific results are true or not. In other words, there's cheating amongst the scientists. And we could never reproduce those experiments. It's very expensive. So the experiments which we are promoting, you know, of transformation of consciousness, anybody can do it. Chanting the holy names, observing the four regulative principles, taking prasadam, and chanting, dancing. Anybody can do that. Practically, 99.99% of the population can do that, unless they happen to be deaf, dumb, and blind. You know, quadriplegic. Even they can take prasadam. And then, in fact, I was just hearing one story, a true anecdote, one of my godbrothers who works in a hospital. He worked in a hospital in Toronto, in Sikh Children's Hospital. But there was this one boy, a Sikh boy. He was on the verge of dying, so the doctors put him into a coma, medically induced coma, because his condition was very serious. So this devotee, my godbrother, he always wears a Hare Krishna t-shirt. He's a respiratory therapist. So the mother of the boy noticed that he was a Hare Krishna. So she asked him, "Can you chant the holy name? Can you chant Hare Krishna to my son, even though he's in a coma?" So he was very happy, because now he's got permission of the mother. So he was chanting, late at night he'd be chanting his japa out loud, right? And then eventually this boy, he was in a coma like for 7 weeks or 7 months, I can't remember, he was in for a very, very long time in the coma. And then they wanted to take him off the machine, let him die. And his mother said, "Only God will decide when he's taken off that machine, not you." So then the doctors were inspired, they tried to do some things, and eventually they, because he had blisters inside of his lungs, and they sucked all the fluid out, and he actually was able to breathe, and then they took him out of the coma. So later, he and a few other patients were asked to give their, what was their experience of being in the ICU for so long. He was in the ICU for a long time in a coma. He said, "I don't remember anything except someone was chanting Hare Krishna. That's all he remembered." It was complete blank for months because he was in a medically induced coma. He only remembered someone was chanting the holy name. It's the only thing that was in his memory. So even somebody in a coma can be benefited by the chanting of the holy name. So 100% of people can be benefited by this process. Now what happens if, you know, sometimes there may be a contradiction between what our senses tell us and what Shastra says? What do we do then? We have to accept what the Shastra says. Otherwise, it's all illusory. Everything else is illusory. It's like a mirage. Our senses are telling us that there's water, but actually there's not water. We become fooled. So we always have to be put our faith in. No matter what it may be, We may not be able to explain why it's wrong, but it's wrong. We may not, yeah, there's so many ways in which something can be wrong. Sometimes as an astrologer, you know, I'll tell somebody, they'll ask me a question, and I say, no, you shouldn't do that. It's not good. Don't do that. Then they ask me, well, why shouldn't I do it? And I tell them, you know, there are thousands of ways in which something can go wrong. But I'll tell them, why don't you do it, and then tell me why you shouldn't have done it later. There's so many ways in which something can go wrong. So we may not know why it's wrong, but we should have faith that Shastra is telling us the opposite. Shastra is correct. That is wrong. We don't know, we may not know why, but it's wrong. Because there's so many ways in which something can be wrong. So then, what happens if we don't follow Shastra? Krishna explains in the Gita that if we don't follow Shastra, if we're faithless, then we have happiness neither in this life or in the next, and we continue in this cycle of samsara. Continuously, birth after birth, life after life, millions and millions of lifetimes. Brahmanda Komya Bhagyavanji Guru Krishna Prasadit Pai Bhakti Lakavija. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya explains that the living entity is going from one Brahmanda to the next Brahmanda. So Brahmanda means the life of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma's life is 311 trillion and 40 billion years long. Now, if we were to, as human years, so just to give an idea of how many lifetimes you would have to go from one Brahmanda to the next Brahmanda. So if we say a human life is 100 years, that would mean 3.1 trillion lifetimes of 100 years as a human being in one Brahmanda. And you're going from one to the next. So that's a lot of lifetimes. That is the result of not having, we don't have Shraddha, we don't have faith in Shastras. And that's what we will have to continue in samsara. So how to develop faith? How to develop faith in Shastras? How to develop faith in authority? By performing the experiment, going to the laboratory of your heart, by following the experience, you see a result. It's like if you eat, nobody has to give you a certificate that you're no longer hungry, because you feel satisfied. So by performing the experiment, you feel some result, that gives you some faith to continue doing more and more of the experiment. It's a very practical, scientific process. So, I will stop now. If anybody has any questions, comments, we'll take them. You can check your iPad instead. All right. No question. Yes, one question here. Is there a microphone for him? Yes, Prabhu. Yes. He wasn't chanting, he was... Did you ask this other question?
See, that boy said somebody chanted Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
The holy.
Yeah.
But here you see the people, they go to temples, but they don't chant. Numbers are more.
Okay.
The number of people going to the temples are more than number.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't chant anything. So what happens to those people?
Well, that boy wasn't chanting the name either. He was hearing. I don't see what's the similarity here. He wasn't chanting either. He was listening. He was hearing the whole thing. So the good people may not be chanting. They're also hearing.
People are trying to devotion.
Okay.
But they don't chant the whole
thing. All right.
So what happens to
them? First of all, if they're hearing submissively, then they hear anyway. The soul hears. It's like that boy. He was not actively chanting. He was just hearing. So then how you can compare, why you're asking if they're not chanting? Well, he wasn't chanting either. It's not a comparison of apples with apples, he was comparing apples with oranges. So it's not whether or not, you know, they're chanting, it's whether or not they're hearing.
Right. Therefore, if we chant for others, then we can hear.
Obviously. That's why, that's what Haridas Thakur said. He said he chants as loud as possible, because then the plants, the insects, everything that hears that holy name gets benefited. That's why the whole thing is Sankirtan, the loud chanting of the holy name. It's like beautiful acoustics in this temple. When everybody's chanting, it just pierces the heart. It goes right to the super soul. There's one instance when Srila Prabhupada was on 26th Avenue, that apparently he was giving Bhagavad Gita class in the evening, and there was very few people. There was this one drunk man sitting outside, laying on the ground. The Prabhupada said, drag him inside. The Prabhupada gave the class and said, now take him outside. The soul has heard. The soul has heard. And we may not know exactly what punya, Shravanam punya, it's a great punya to hear the holy name. They may not be aware of it. They may not even be aware of how much spiritual advancement they're making by hearing the holy name. So simply by hearing the holy name, that's the reason we go out. Supposed to go out as much as possible and chant the holy name, because it benefits people. Even they're not aware of it. Even if they chant back in mockery, they make benefit. They get tremendous spiritual benefit, which is unimaginable. As Srila Prabhupada said to Harishari, the news was brought to Srila Prabhupada that Bhakti Vilas Tirtha had died. Bhakti Vilas Tirtha was inimical to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada immediately said he went back to Godhead, because he had pleased his Guru Maharaj. And then he turned to Harishari and said, you cannot even realize how much spiritual advancement you're making. You don't even realize. By the process will fall, even accidentally, by taking a little prasadam. So much advancement we can make. Everybody's heard of Ramanujacharya. Everybody knows Ramanujacharya? So he had a guru, Yadava Prakash, who was very inimical to him at first, because Yadava Prakash was a Advaitin, and they had argumentation. But eventually he became a disciple of Ramanujacharya. So there was one instance when the daughter of the king, Cholaraj, she was inhabited by a Brahma Rakshasa. So they called for Yadav Prakash, because he was very powerful in exorcism. So he said, you just tell that Rakshasa to leave by my order. So the Rakshasa, he said, ah, forget about that. He didn't know. He said, you have to come directly. Bring that Ramanuja with you. So then he came into the audience, and there's the young princess there, and she's raving mad, and she's inhabited the Brahma Rakshasa. So he began to, so Yadav Prakash began chanting all these elaborate mantras. And the Brahma Rakshasa says, listen, I was a Brahmana. I can counteract all your mantras. I know who I was. I know who you were in your past life, and I know who I was in my past life. I was a Brahmana, and because I did not properly chant some mantras, I made a mistake, and therefore I'm born as a Brahma Rakshasa. Yadav Prakash told him, if you know about who was I in my past life? In your past life, you were a crocodile. And some Sri Vaishnavas, they came, after eating prasadam, they washed their mouth, and they spit the water into the river, and some of those particles of food entered into your mouth, and that's why you're born as who you are now. Because a tiny little particle of prasadam entered into his mouth. And of course, at first he was inimical to Ramanuja, but then later he became a disciple of Ramanuja. So we don't even understand what is the progress that people are making. A tiny particle shot in a crocodile's mouth. In the next lifetime he was born a highly elevated Brahmana, who became then a pure devotee, with a little interval of, his lila with Ramanuja. So what to speak of chanting the holy name? We have no understanding, no inner. idea what the effect is. Any other question?
Thank you very much.
Manu, at the very end of Manu Samhita, he makes this point that those persons that were considered that something that is modern is more relevant than what is Veda, is that they are non-Veda. Because what is the definition of what is unreal? In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that which has no duration has no reality. And that which has no cessation, that is what is real. So the very definition of what is modern is that it's here today and gone tomorrow. It's not modern tomorrow, it's no longer relevant, it's no longer up to date. Whereas the Vedas are eternal. You know, the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's explained that the Bhagavatam is meant to give light for the whole Kali Yuga, not just for the first 5 years. For the whole of Kali Yuga, it's true, eternally. What is the difference, you say, that now things are different? What is the difference? What is the struggle for material existence are eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Right? That was what it was 10 million years ago. That's what it is today. Well, but we have the internet. Well, what do they do on the internet? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, right? You go to shadi.com if you want to find a mate, you know, and it's the same thing. And 10 million years from now, it's going to be the same struggle for material existence. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. You want your children to go to the best school. You want to get to that degree. Why? If you don't get a good job, then you'll get a pain right here. Right? It's called hunger. So all this education, all these different things is to solve the belly-filling problem. And then if you can't, you don't have enough money, you don't have a good enough degree, then you can't get an attractive spouse. Right? That's the same thing. The real problems are birth, death, old age, and disease. That was the problem before, it's the problem now, that'll be the problem then. Problem didn't change, the solution is the same. If the problems change, you have new solutions. But the problems are exactly the same today that they were before. So no, that's insane. It's Maya. Those persons who are so-called modern, and that's the very essence of unreality. The very essence. It's not real, because it has no duration. But what is modern today is not modern tomorrow. It's not modern 1 year from now, because that's the nature of time. That which has no cessation, that's real. It's true forever. Any other questions?
Alright. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.